or no deal. That's a game show, right? Also, it's the way the federal government runs its budget process. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, July the 18th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with an eye on the calendar, the soon-to-be fiscal year-end calendar of the government of the United States of America. It's always an uncertain time, as regular listeners to this program will know. Congress and the White House having a history, as they do, regardless of which party is in power where, of not always seeing things the same way when it comes to the budget. But we are told by somebody who should know, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin by name, that he has basically come to terms on a budget deal with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. But the term budget deal is doing more work than usual this year. For more on that, we've got Marketplace's Kimberly Adams live on the phone from Washington. Hey, Kimberly.
Hey, Kai.
All right. There is a lot packed into budget deal this year. Help me out.
Okay, two things in particular. Number one is raising the debt limit. If you'll remember, the debt ceiling expired in March, and the Treasury Department has been using extraordinary measures, as they call it, to keep paying the bills since then. So they need a deal to raise it either in the short term or in the long term, or maybe even just halt the debt limit altogether. Sure. Tied in with that is a deal to raise the budget caps. Those are the limits on spending bills that need to pass later this year. If they don't lift those budget caps, we're looking at 10% across the board cuts on defense and non-defense spending. Nobody wants that.
There are those who will remember the phrase sequester. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes. Okay. Again, right. Nobody likes that.
Nobody wants that. Got it. Okay. So back to the topic at hand here. We've got two issues, both dealing with government spending. Why are they being bundled as opposed to dealt with separately?
So this will help both of them get done ahead of some crucial deadlines. We're probably going to lose the ability to use those extraordinary measures to keep paying the bills sometime in September, maybe October. And we need an agreement on those budget caps now so that Congress can pass those spending bills when the fiscal year ends on September 30th. And it's also worth noting that Congress has never failed to raise the debt limit, even with all of the hubbub that we hear all the time around it. But we have had several government shutdowns because they didn't pass spending bills. Right. So we're kind of pairing a must pass bill with a really need to pass bill.
The theory being you can shut down the government for a month and it's terrible, terrible, terrible for a lot of people. But blowing the debt limit would be terrible globally. Is that that's the deal, right?
Yeah, because basically then no one trusts the U.S. government to loan them money ever again.
Okay, so forecast for me, spitball, if you will. Where are we going with this thing? Is it going to happen? What's the what?
Well, this morning, like you mentioned, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said they'd agreed on some top-line numbers. He's been the point person negotiating this with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi said she wants a deal before Congress leaves for the August recess. So that only leaves a few days to kind of hammer out all these deals. And there are still some sticking points, like whether or not some of this new spending will be offset by cuts elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Plus, of course, President Trump has to sign off on all this.
And has the White House said where the president stands, by the way?
Not really. They're pretty much leaving it to the Treasury Department right now, but we'll see.
Kimberly Adams in what I understand is a sweltering Washington, D.C. Thanks, Kimberly.
It's awful. Thanks, Kai.
Talk to you soon. In corporate news, there is this. Netflix and... Nah, I'm just not in the mood. The streaming service reported yesterday it had missed its global growth projection for last quarter by a lot. 2.8 million new subscribers instead of 5 million. Also, that U.S. subscriptions actually fell for the first time ever, less than a percent to be sure, but still they fell. So Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on the headwinds that Netflix might be facing.
In the last quarter, Netflix raised its prices by a dollar or two a month, depending on the plan. But the company said that wasn't the cause for the decline in subscribers.
Netflix chose to blame it on the lack of compelling lineup of content during the quarter.
According to Michael Pachter at Wedbush Securities, there's a case to be made there. Its hit show, Stranger Things, returned for a third season on July 4th, after the quarter had ended. Its other big show, The Crown, will come back later this year. Tuna Amobi at CFRA says Netflix is going to be fine.
While Q2 was a major miss and disappointment, we still don't see any fundamental change in the story, especially in the international market.
But Michael Pachter at Wedbush says there's a limit on how many water cooler shows Netflix can produce. There's only so much Hollywood talent with a track record of hits.
You know, how many shows is Shonda Rhimes going to make? Two shows a year at, you know, 10 hours each? Great, that's 20 hours of viewing. Not enough.
Meanwhile, two of Netflix's most popular shows are leaving next year. Friends for HBO Max and The Office for a new streaming service from NBC Universal. Plus, Disney is also launching its own competitor.
So come back to me next year once two of those three have launched, and let's see how Netflix is doing.
Netflix says instead of spending on licensing old shows, it'll pour more money into its own content. But it's already spending. The company will have a negative cash flow of $3.5 billion this year. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
I think the answer is Shonda Rhimes is going to make as many shows as she wants to. That's the answer. A little bumpy on Wall Street today. Corporate profits are okay. Trade worries are not. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Close readers of corporate earnings reports will have noticed something in the raft of big bank profit reports that started landing earlier this week. Those banks are not making as much money as they used to from trading and business loans. The new thing? Wealth management. Marketplace's Justin Ho is on that one.
The stock market is setting records. Baby boomers are retiring and figuring out how to make their savings last. There might be a recession coming. And banks want you to know that they're here for you, to help you realize your dreams and theirs.
Everyone has goals. Take the steps to reach yours with us.
Wealth management services include investment advice, ways to save on taxes. Banks will often pair you up with a dedicated financial advisor. TV ads often show big life milestones, complete with soft lighting and corny lines about the future.
Because the real wealth in life is being able to embrace more of life's possibilities.
Banks offer this because there's a growing demand for wealth management. The Pew Research Center says there are over 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. Banks know that for a lot of those people, it can be kind of scary making sure they have enough saved for retirement.
That's the hardest part for a lot of people, is just realizing how uncertain this stuff is.
That's Ben Carlson at an independent advisory firm called Ritholtz Wealth Management. There's a growing number of small firms like his out there, especially with the stock market hitting new highs all the time. Carlson says big banks are starting to gobble up those smaller firms.
I think a lot of this is those bigger places fighting back and realizing that these independent places are sort of infringing on their territory a little bit.
Charles Schwab is reportedly in talks to buy the wealth management business of USAA. Earlier this year, Goldman Sachs bought up a wealth management firm called United Capital. The struggling Deutsche Bank says it'll focus more on wealth management after announcing thousands of layoffs and a drastic reduction in its investment bank.
One thing that I will tell you about managing a bank is it's a kind of a balancing act.
That's Kent Belasco, a former executive at First Midwest Bank in Illinois, which also bought up a wealth management firm this year. He says banks like wealth management services because they make money through fees.
The nice thing about fee income, it isn't affected by what the Fed does.
Belasco says with the Fed poised to lower rates this year, banks won't be making as much on loans, which are normally the bulk of a bank's revenue. Relying more on wealth management fees will help them find a more stable source of income. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We spent some time on the program yesterday talking about the two big drivers in this economy, businesses and consumers. Consumers, you might remember if you heard it, are generally doing pretty well. But for every general slice of the consumer economy that's doing all right, there are specifics. So we reach back out to some of the people we've been talking to the past couple of months to see how they are feeling in their economic day to day.
Hello, Marketplace. My name is Kaya Price Dennis. I'm from Short Pump, Virginia. My grocery bill has stayed pretty consistent over the past year. I have noticed an increase in gas, but I attribute that to the summer months and people going on vacation. My son's starting college in August. Yay! So I've had to cut back on going out to eat or going to the movies to save a little bit more money. My parents are turning 70 this year, so we've discussed future elder care for them and their quality of living. We decided as a family to move together by the summer of 2021. It just makes sense to pool resources instead of paying over $6,000 a month to maintain two households, particularly since they are getting older, and so am I for that matter.
Hello, this is Sudipto Chatterjee from the San Francisco Bay Area. I have not noticed too many changes in prices, but personally, I think I have become more aware of where I am spending my money, and I'm doing more and more research before I do that. For example, on my recent trip to Hawaii, I noticed that we could go to most of the island or the places of interest by just taking the public transit and getting our day passes. So we did not rent a car. It was really awesome to visit all the places by using the public transit system that was already available.
This is Kelly Koletsky in Columbus, Ohio. It seems as if groceries and the cost of other staples has stabilized in the past couple of months, but then there are other things. It seems like the cost of other items has gone up. Due to a gas tax increase to fund highway infrastructure projects, gas has climbed to about $3 a gallon. And also, my 30-year-old central air conditioner unit met its demise a couple of weeks ago, and I had to purchase a new one. Unfortunately, the cost of a central air conditioner unit has gone up several hundred dollars due to the tariffs with China. I think what I'm going to have to do is I'll just have to be very frugal, from now to the near future, because I not only need to, recoup the cost of the central air conditioner unit, I also need to recoup the extra cost from the tariffs.
That was, as they said, Kaya Price Dennis in Short Pump, Virginia, Sudipta Chatterjee in San Francisco, also Kelly Koletsky in Columbus, Ohio. For Marketplace Digital, this item: does your workplace have an HR department, or is it now known as people and culture, perhaps, or even something else? Since Human Resources is going through something of a makeover, you can check out a story on the how and the why of that on our website, marketplace.org. Coming up,
diastole, the process of the heart relaxing to refill.
We'll take a break from email and learn some new words. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is basically flat today, gained 3 points, 27,222. The NASDAQ up 0.2%, 22 points, 8207. The S&P 500, 0.3% higher, 10 points, 29.95. The earnings parade continues along with the aftermath. Netflix, as we mentioned, took a double-digit hit after yesterday's lackluster earnings report. Shares down more than 10%. Competition seems to be wondering if they were next. AT&T, owner of Time Warner, threw off a 0.5%. Amazon, which has also been throwing bags of money at original streaming content, off 0.7% today. One of those stocks that can tell you a lot, I bring you PPG Industries. It makes industrial coating and paint for things like boats and cars. And if PPG sales climbs, that means the factories are making more stuff. Revenue fell at the Pittsburgh company. Shares up 0.3% anyway because capitalism. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The heat index in Washington, D.C. this weekend, that is temperature plus humidity, is going to hit 110 to 115 degrees. Death Valley, out here in California, 116. But that's a dry heat, right? Thing is, the kind of heat the Northeast is going to get this weekend isn't just uncomfortable, it's dangerous. And with climate change, it is getting more common and more expensive. Marketplace's Ben Bradford is on that one.
The first tendrils of the heat wave have already reached Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, it's getting warm.
Sima Merrick heads Ohio's Emergency Management Agency, and she says her office is working around the clock.
We have a 24-hour watch office. The priority will be paying attention to critical utilities, vulnerable populations.
In Washington, D.C., Emergency Management Director Christopher Rodriguez says there'll be no respite from the heat.
The alarming thing is that it won't drop below 90 degrees, even overnight.
D.C. is opening cooling centers for those who don't have air conditioning and telling people to hydrate, stay inside, and check on family. All of this has a cost, but Rodriguez downplays any strain.
You know, we deal with this every summer. We deal with extreme heat, whether it be for several days or a day or two.
But severe weather events like this heat wave are becoming more frequent. And Old Dominion University professor Ron Carley says cities must account for that in their budgets.
We're in a period of complete uncertainty. Natural events have got to be part of our primary planning and planning for conditions that we've never seen.
One recent climate report finds just building new power plants for extra heating and cooling needs will cost U.S. customers $12 billion a year.
I mean, the economic costs are going to be huge.
Jessica Granis at Georgetown Law says beyond emergency preparedness, cities designed for one environment will have to adapt to another.
Everything from buildings to landscapes to how the city provides services.
D.C. expects high heat days to more than double in the next 50 years. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
I was up in Aspen, Colorado earlier this week, a Fortune magazine conference up there, sitting in the hotel lobby, minding my own business, when up comes a woman rolling a suitcase.
Hey, how are you?
Hey.
I'm Kai.
Hey.
Nice to see you. How are you doing?
Jen Rubio is the co-founder and chief brand officer of a luggage company called Away.
Please, come on in to my lobby, as it were.
Of course. Thank you.
You could sit over there. Oh, is this the suit? This is the suitcase.
Away makes suitcases for people walking through places like this one.
Well, actually, I walked in and the first person I saw had an Away bag.
Oh,
he's still over there.
Come on.
Maybe we should go talk to him and ask
him.
Yeah,
we'll get them later.
Rubio knows how to sell. She was an early hire at the direct-to-consumer eyewear company Warby Parker. She co-founded Away with another Warby Parker alum in 2015, and now they are running a startup worth $1.5 billion.
Well, let's climb right in here.
Let's do it.
So here we sit in the lobby of the fabulous St. Regis in Aspen. As you see people walking up to that reception desk with their suitcases, what was it that you wanted to change about that?
You know what? There's so many things wrong with travel, and we started with the one thing that everybody brings on their trip, which is luggage. And if you think about kind of the landscape before Away, I could tell you 100 people who traveled every week, every other week, and didn't know the bag that they were bringing with them. And as a brand person, that tells me something's really wrong, right? It's this industry where you can either get something that's cheap or affordable, but you know it's not going to last that long.
Right. That's me. That's where I go, yeah, to be honest. Right?
Exactly. And then, you know, you're not that bummed after it breaks for a couple trips. But on the other end of the spectrum, you're getting something really high-end. You're paying a ton of money for it, probably more than your flight cost.
Yep.
And you're not really sure why.
Back up to you being a brand person.
Yeah.
How do you get people to think of luggage as a brand instead of this stupid thing that goes in the overhead rack and gets bounced around on the conveyor belts?
Yeah, well, you know what? I always say the difference between a good product and a brand is emotion. So to me, your brand is not what you put out there. It's not what's on your website or your Instagram, even though ours are very good. so I'm just going to say
Speaking of Instagram,
yeah.
Away ads show up my Instagram all the freaking time.
Yep.
I have not clicked on one ever. I like, you know, foreign and travel-related posts on Instagram. You guys are keying into me, I guess. You're all over the place.
Yeah, we are very good at that. But it's less about what we're saying and what we're putting out there and more about storytelling and how we fit into people's lifestyles. Every single luggage brand before Away talked about zippers, they talked about wheels, they talked about ballistic nylon.
Yep.
What is that anyway?
Remember those days?
I think now we're in this era of people, I'm not going to say the M word, millennials.
No, oh yeah, no.
But people who travel, who love to talk about it, and this is a big part of that.
You launch this company, you discover that you're not going to make, what was it, Christmas season in 2015, right? You had some delivery problems with the product. You did something else. Tell me what you did and why.
Well, we were a little ambitious. The idea came from Away in January of 2015 when I was on a trip and my luggage broke. By summer of 2015, we had raised a $2 million seed round. We were deep into product development, and we were ambitious.
6 months, you had $2 million.
Yeah, we were ambitious and said, hey, let's launch before the holidays. So we set up these big plans to do that, and September, October rolls around, and we realize, hey, we're not actually going to have these bags. So we did what any two sane people would do and said, let's write a book instead. And inside the book will be a gift card for the suitcase that people can get when it's ready in February. So we wrote a travel book, this like beautiful little coffee table book. We made thousands and thousands of these books. And
it's a gutsy move.
Yeah,
right?
And we launched before the holiday, and people loved it. And I think, you know, it wasn't so much about the book. You know, it wasn't a New York Times bestseller or anything.
Yeah, it's not the point.
But it was people got the book, and they realized, hey, this is a brand that exists to talk about travel in a way that no one else is talking about it right now. And I think when we think about our marketing and our content and the way we talk to our customers, that's how we want to connect with our community.
It's so interesting to hear you, the brand officer for a luggage company, talking about content.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We had content before we had a product.
Yeah.
When I say we make luggage, I say that in the way that Nike just made a running shoe back in the day, or that Lululemon just made a yoga pant. But what they've really made is this brand that's cultivated a community of like very, very loyal advocates, people who will talk about your brand and your product and really be the fuel for the growth. So when we think about what we're going to do over the next few years, what we're really, really focused on is how do we create a community of travelers who basically tell us what they want, and then we feed it back out to the community. And I think that's going to be our next 10 years.
How much do you travel? You must travel all the time.
I'm on a plane at least once a week.
Are you?
Yeah, I had to keep track last year for tax purposes. And I was on 172 flights.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. All in a carry-on.
Jen, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank
you.
You
can go enjoy the conference or whatever you're going to do.
Thank you.
This summer, in our Every Now and Then series, Automatic Reply, we've been playing some of the more creative out-of-office emails people have set up while they're on vacation. This next one kind of gets to the heart of things.
I am not checking email until June 17th because I am in diastole. When on my annual summer vacations, I generally have an out-of-office reply that features a silly description of why I am ignoring email. And my ignorance of email this week is happening, so take note. But this vacation will include the third anniversary of the loss of a good friend to suicide. This loss led to considerable changes in how I manage my time, and most especially in how I recharge. A recent short essay in the Journal of the American Medical Association eloquently used the concept of diastole, the process of the heart relaxing to refill, as a metaphor for this important time of life. A time of reflection and active refilling, so that I am best able to function for those around me and be refilled by needed time with those I value the most. So I will answer my email in a fit of systole when I get back. Until then, I will be actively relaxing. Although, in truth, this is a vacation with my in-laws, so there may be some diastolic dysfunction.
That was Dr. Gabriel Bosslet at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Do us a favor and tell us about an out-of-office email that you have seen. We will get it on the program. Marketplace.org is how you reach us. This final note on the way out today, in which Article 1, Section 7, Clause 2 of the Constitution of the United States comes into play. The House passed a bill this morning that would raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's been at $7.25 since 2009. As you might have guessed, though, Article 1, Section 7, Clause 2 is the part of the Constitution that says bills have to be passed by both houses of Congress and be signed by the president before they become law. This one will not be. All right, we're going. The Dow Industrial is basically flat today, up just 3 points. The NASDAQ up 0.2%. That is 22 points. S&P 500 advanced 0.3%. That is 10 points there. Amir Bibawing, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bikella, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.